My store is called Championship Vinyl. Turn it off!
I can't fire them. I hired these guys for 3 days a week, and they just started showing up every day. That was 4 years ago.
Rob Gordon has a successful business and a dedicated following.
I used to go to the double door to hear you spin. You were unbelievable.
But when it comes to dating...
Hi.
Hi. Is this Penny Hardwick?
Hi, Caroline.
He's still searching for the right woman.
What's your name?
Laura!
Now his search may have ended.
She does this thing in bed when she can't get to sleep. She kind of half moans and then rubs her feet together an equal number of times.
But his problems just started.
I like you with Laura. I don't think much of this Ian guy.
What Ian guy?
You gotta be kidding me.
Touchstone Pictures presents...
How's Ian? He's growing on me. He looks like he could grow on something.
John Cusack, Jack Black, Lisa Bonet, Joan Cusack, Eben Yila, and Lily Taylor.
Obviously, I know how special Laura is. I would hate it if I lost her. You know what I'm saying, G?
Get your patchouli stick out of my store! Get some of this! Get it, man!
Think about it, Rob. Okay?
High Fidelity.
I'm looking for a record for my daughter. I just called to say I love you.
Do we look like the kind of store that sells I just called to say I love you? Go to the mall.
What's your problem?
Do you even know your daughter? There's no way she likes that song. Oh, is she in a coma?
Hello and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and our old pal David Gutierrez is back. Hello, David.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm glad to have you back on the show. We're here to talk about High Fidelity. Yeah. We're not talking about Highlander. We are here to talk about Highlander 2. No, we're here to talk about High Fidelity, the 2000 romantic comedy starring John Cusack. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's one of my favorite comedies of all time. It's one of my favorite romantic movies of all time. I assume you feel the same way?
It's in my top five.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, the basic plot is Rob Gordon, a record store owner played by, of course, John Cusack. He's a record store owner and compulsive list maker. He recounts his top five breakups, including the one in progress. And as the movie opens, he has just broken up with his girlfriend, Laura, played by Eben Yahel, I think, or Yahel?
Heil?
Something
it's
like that.
It's just from Denmark.
Yeah, she's from Denmark. So, but he's just breaking up with her at the beginning of the film, and then he recounts all of his breakups to this point, and he talks to the camera. This is a fourth wall breaking movie, and we get to see his adventures in the vinyl record store that he works at, which is for collectors only, because they're looking for original,
yes,
not re-released, underlined Frank Zappa albums. So, for anyone who's a comic book fan, and I assume most of you are that are listening to this, you know this store, even if you've never shopped in it.
You know this story, really. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure a guy named Rob, who has a compulsive obsession with collecting something of a certain type, being very particular about those things, disregarding anybody whose opinions, disregarding the opinions of those who disagree with him. I feel like maybe. Now, maybe you can't talk about this right now, but I feel like there might be a lawsuit brewing.
Yes, I. This is, of course, based on the book by Nick Hornby, who said it in London. But when it was taken over by John Cusack and his writing partners,
Steve Pink and
Steve Pink and D. Vincentis, they moved it to Chicago, of course, because that's where all these guys are from. Cusack,
right?
So I've never
and Scott
read,
Rosenberg.
And, oh, Scott Rosenberg. I've never read the book. You've read the book?
Multiple times. Well, I was a fan of the book before the movie. I was one of those people who was upset the movie was being set in America when it was announced that, for one thing, it was Rob Fleming was the name of the original character, and he becomes Rob Gordon. It's going to be in Chicago, and it's going to be in the U.S., and now it's going to be all messed up. But, it was a very good, almost, you know, it's one of those things that can kind of stand alone, yet is a nice compliment to the original source material.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this movie is, to me, hysterically funny. It features great performances, and it is an incredibly warm movie. That's what I
think. It's a smart movie.
It's a smart movie, and it's a warm movie. I mean, to me, the characters are likable, and to me, the filmmakers themselves, this is directed by Stephen Frears. We haven't mentioned that. An Englishman.
Right.
Interesting that an Englishman.
A gentleman.
ends up directing a film which is, you know, moving the story from England over to America. But I think it loves its characters. I think it really has affection for everybody, even though Rob Gordon is a bit of a jerk. In a lot of ways.
Oh, he's completely self-absorbed, yeah. And it's – well, we can get into kind of – one thing I'm curious about is your take on Rob outside the movie had his life continued. But Rob is very – I mean, he's very much – like the movie makes a point of showing how stunted Rob is and how self-absorbed he is. One of the great examples of that is when he's talking to Allison Ashmore, his second –
That's his first second. Girlfriend. Wasn't that the first?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Penny. Penny was his second girlfriend.
Yeah, Alan Aspermore was the one he used to make out with.
Right.
Just one in the afternoon after school, but before Rockford Files.
That's right. I knew you'd like that. Joel Carter from Justified playing Penny Hardwick, who that was his high school sweetheart, and he dumped her because she wouldn't sleep with him. And it turns out that she'd slept with the next guy that she dated. Rob was told this by that guy in high school, and it bothered him ever since. And only he found out that she says that it wasn't rape, but it was pretty close to it. And instead of being sympathetic toward it, because she storms off from him when he meets her several years later. We'll get into why several years later. His immediate reaction is relief on his end that, oh, this had nothing to do with me. This has everything to do with external circumstances. The reason Rob goes on this sort of journey into his past big breakups is because he wants to find out if something's wrong with him. Why do these women keep breaking up with me? What's wrong with me? And there's plenty wrong with Rob, but as he finds out when he talks to the four women in the movie, it's four women. When he talks to the four girls, that it's not necessarily just him, but there's obviously other mitigating factors that, and oftentimes he's not even in the first case, for example, with Allison Ashmore, that girl ends up marrying the guy that that she left Rob for.
Kevin Bannister.
And, then they have kids and then they live in, South Australia somewhere. So it has nothing to do with him. You know, it just life goes on, and he has a very hard time with the conceit that life happens without him present, or it doesn't involve him directly.
Yeah, he's very, very immature. I mean, you said that moment where Joel Carter, and she's terrific. She only has really seen one scene.
She's wonderful.
Playing Penny Hardwick, and she's a movie reviewer. And when she reveals that...
That's how you know it's fiction, because I've never met a Penny Hardwick at any of these...
her little pen, what is it?
Light up pen.
Yeah. She can write reviews. Yeah, when she has that line, I mean, she's for a movie that can be very cartoony, because of course Jack Black is in this movie and he's very big in this movie. He's ramping it up to like a 12. But I mean, like that little reveal where she mentions that she was so insecure about her own self for Rob dumping her that she basically slept with the next guy. And as you said, she has that line about it wasn't rape, but it was close. That's a heavy line.
Yeah.
And it just blows by Rob because he's just too self-centered. But it's like, that's a pretty great little detail to give her. Like, that's a wonderful little bit of dignity that character gets. She's not just a joke. She's not just a foil for the John Cusack character to get a bunch of laughs. No, she's a real, and like you just said, she's a real person. She existed before Rob came into her life, and she exists after. And that's, again, that's one of the things I love about this movie is that these all, even though this is a heightened reality and there are very cartoony elements, everyone here feels real. And this was something that I mentioned in the previous episode of Film and Water where me and the Sutherlands covered Gross Point Blank. This is the same people. It's obviously the same star and it's the same writers. It's even the side characters, even characters with one scene or half
like
a scene. Yeah, they get a little something. When he calls Kevin Bannister's mother,
Oh, she's
not
wonderful.
Not Kevin Banzer's mother. What's her name?
Allison
Ashmore's
Allison's
mother.
Mom, yeah.
And she's got a glass of wine in the afternoon, which is a great detail. And she's like, I'm sorry to disappoint. I'm sorry to quibble with you, Rob. She's like, but Allison married her first and only boyfriend, Kevin Banister. And he's like, well, technically me. I was technically first.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah, and she's like, I don't know what you mean by technically. And then she goes, well, gotta go, Bob. Bye. And hangs up the phone. It's like just that little, like, she has no time for this idiot who's wasting this, you know, this ridiculous argument. I love all those little details. And this feels like, again, like it's of a piece with Gross Point Blank, even though the films thematically don't have anything to do with each other.
Totally.
It feels like it's a part of, like, the John Cusack universe, sort of, because they have a very similar approach with giving all these characters a little bit of business, even though, of course, said Cusack's your star.
It is odd that he has – there was – when he did this movie, Gross Point Blank, I think – was it War, Inc.? I felt like he was kind of, okay, this is the Cusack of One Crazy Summer, of Sure Thing, of Better Off Dead, where, like, this character is this – how can I put this? It's great for me when I see an actor that I'm so familiar with playing a character, but I'm no longer seeing the actor in that role. Mm-hmm. Like, if I see a Tom Cruise movie, I know Tom Cruise is jumping off a building or something. It's always Tom Cruise. Right. You know what I mean? I see High Fidelity. I'm watching Rob. I'm not watching John Cusack. I'm watching – if I watch Gross Point Blank, I'm blanking on the name of the character, no pun intended.
Martin Blank.
I'm watching Martin. I'm not watching Cusack. And these are one of those few roles that he has where he can truly become that person and kind of just hide in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's interesting considering that he spends so much time talking to the fourth wall. You would think that if anything, that would be a breaker, but yet it seems to work. I mean, there's even a flashback of John Cusack playing himself in high school, which is the most ridiculous thing. And yet you just sort of buy it because it's so sort of – you realize you're in Rob's world.
Right.
And how he sees things. I mean, there's a scene here where he talks to Bruce Springsteen, for Pete's sakes.
A little thing about that scene. This movie would have been your favorite movie of all time.
I know.
Cusack had his way.
Bob Dylan. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. I mean, I have to say, for as much as I love Bob Dylan, and everyone knows I do,
I've not heard that. Do you have a show about that or something?
I do. Bob Dylan is not much of an actor. And I think he probably would not have even been able to do that scene. I think Bruce Springsteen probably ended up doing a better job, but we don't know. Now, of course, Dylan is in the movie. This movie, as you might expect for a movie set in a record store, has an amazing soundtrack. I mean, the list of songs in this thing is fantastic. And
like
it features
50 of them.
Yeah, and it features two Dylan songs. It features
Harry Nilsson, My Guy's Queen.
That's right. We are the Champions. There's that great. There's a great scene with Mira the Chip where he finds out that Laura, who is now living with Ian, playing the odious
Tim
Ian,
Robbins.
Played by Tim Robbins, great.
Ian or Ray, depending on who you ask.
I hate Ian. I hate him too. When he finds out that she has not yet slept with Ian, and then they cut to We Are the Champions, which is like the perfect sound cue. Because who hasn't felt like that when you learn that kind of thing about an ex-girlfriend or a current girlfriend? That's a great bit.
It is tough, man.
But I do want to mention this song. The soundtrack uses Most of the Time by Bob Dylan, which is a great – it uses it for a dramatic scene, which is great. But it also uses Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You, which is one of my all-time favorite Dylan songs. And it's they use it to score a romantic scene with him and Lisa Bonet, who plays Marie DeSalle, this local musician. And it is – I love that song. It's not one of Dylan's most famous. I remember seeing this in the theater, and when I heard that come on the soundtrack, I got so excited because I was like, wow, someone else appreciates that song the way I do. I love this. So this thing is just chock-a-block with great music all the way from beginning to end.
Oh, it has Shipbuilding on it.
You don't get any sweeter
than that, the Elvis Costello song. And of course, one of my favorites from Stevie Wonder, I believe, When I Fall in Love, It Will Be Forever.
We will get into that. This thing has the best end credit sequence of all time, in my opinion, but we'll get to that.
Do you tear up watching this movie, Rob?
I don't tear up, because I'm a robot, as we all know.
Robot.
But I mean, I do find this a very powerful movie.
Moving.
And again, it's very moving. We're jumping around a bit. We can't help it when you love a movie so much. Like when
just watch the fucking thing.
Hey, now come on, we can potty mouth. When you have the two employees, Dick and
Dick and Barry.
Dick and Barry. I love the whole bit about I can't fire them. They just started showing up every day. There's no way I can fire these two.
They were after noon help, and they just came every day all
that
day.
That was 4 years ago. When Todd Luiso plays Dick, he meets Sarah Gilbert's character.
Anna Moss.
Is she all green and fuzzy and mossy? when she's a record store customer, their little meet cute is adorable. Like, they have a wonderful little scene together. And then later on, they're all going to go out together. And Dick is like, I can't. I have a date. And they're, like, making fun of him a little. You got a date? Who's this bruiser? Did you meet her at the bus station or whatever?
Shell Green and Mossy?
Yeah, Shell Green and Mossy. And then there's a shot. And it's in for a comedy. It's kind of a serious moment where Rob watches Dick walk across the street where he meets Anna. And it's a silent scene, and they meet each other, and they just hug.
Yeah.
And it's such a sweet, wonderful little moment to give this little side character. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
That scene is doubly good because Barry can't meet with them because Barry's going to rehearse with his band.
Right.
And just the scene prior to that, Rob says that he doesn't even – he just wants to be part of something, right? Like, so if it's being part of liner notes, he just wants to be a part of music somehow. And clearly he's still pining for Laura, and so he wants to be a part of that. So the two guys that he looks down on, probably ever since he's met them.
The musical moron twins, as he calls them.
Right. Each have a thing that he desires more than anything. And so he's just left alone again. I mean, so much no pun intended about the song. But no, he's so obsessed with not being alone, yet wants to make himself available for everything. He becomes his own worst enemy. I think what's great about Rob is he's in love with the idea of possibilities, and the idea that things can happen to him at any moment. But he never allows things to happen to him at any moment, even though things just happen to him most of the time.
Well, Laura makes an accusation at one point where she says you only like sort of the beginnings of things or like you know.
Oh, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and he has a whole essay about like her underwear. You know, that like she only brings out the really nice underwear when a woman's going to sleep with somebody. And
yeah.
I mean, the level of his maturity is the level of his maturity can be found in a line that I feel is hysterical and painfully accurate when he yells at Charlie, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones, after she dumps him and he's out in the rain and he yells, "Charlie, you fucking bitch, let's work it out." That is every That is but, every guy who is completely clueless about how to make a relationship work, that he can put those two sentences together and sees no irony there.
Listen, it's been used. That's all I got to say. I think this movie gets me so much because I, for a long time, was Rob-esque. You know what? Actually, I would hand a girl this book and later this movie to test them to see if they get it. And if they get it, they get me. And if they get me, maybe they get me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's how Shallow David operated for a number of years. but I even had a kind of a Charlie experience where I dated a girl who then saw this movie and then called me to say, I now get why you like this movie so much, because Charlie and Rob remind you of me and you.
Wow. And
then you miss the point if you don't get the problem with Charlie.
Yeah.
Charlie, Catherine Zeta-Jones, is a horrible human being. She's not even a person, really. She's just kind of a collection of phrases when you think about it.
I do love when he goes to visit her again, and he says he realizes what's awful about her, and he's like, she's awful. She says the stupidest shit. She has no sense of humor. She doesn't. That is the one moment where I think the audience is a little ahead of Rob, where he's like, I didn't understand. He couldn't understand what he saw in her. And it's like, oh, come on. It's Catherine Zeta-Jones.
That's all you saw in her. That's what
he saw in her, was that it was Catherine Zeta-Jones. She was ridiculously attractive. Yeah. His whole line about you got to punch your weight, I find that to be frighteningly accurate. I had a Charlie myself. In life, and you know, yeah, it's you look back on it and you just kind of shudder a little,
right? Because it's all maintenance. You know what I mean? It's like not to objectify it or anything, but like if you have the most amazing car in the world, but you live in the worst neighborhood in the world at the same time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The whole time you're going to be you're just going to be eyeing the thing. You're going to make sure nobody's touching it. No, why are you looking at my car? Is this thing running well? You know what I mean? It's that. I remember. It's amazingly true. That doesn't mean that, you know, you're not punching your weight, quote unquote. It just means that you're completely, you have no faith in yourself at the same time, or your sense of self-import isn't quite there.
Yeah, you see that they're completely wrong from one another. And of course, he has another, one of the other girls in his top five is Lily Taylor. Who plays
Sarah Kendrick?
Sarah Kendrew, and of course Lily Taylor. Yeah, Lily Taylor was in Say Anything with John Cusack, so there's a nice little reunion there. But I mean, I love that they get in that whole flashback about that they were both 25 and they thought they were going to be alone forever when they each were broke up. Because you know, it takes people of a certain disposition to believe at 25 that you're going to be alone together. And then of course she ends up meeting somebody else. She dumps Rob, and then later on when they get back together again, he's like, "How you doing?" She's like, "Not good." She's not good. She's like, Lily Taylor is great at this sort of neediness kind of thing. So she's. And he has the whole bit about, I could sleep with this woman again, but it would just be sleeping with her problems and her whole thing, and I don't want to do that. So he starts to learn a little bit because he could.
Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, a little.
I love that, but he never, like, it's never about helping her. It's just about not helping himself.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's never, what can I do to help you out, Lily Taylor or Sarah? It's, you know what? This is just going to be a mess for me. So I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because this is Pandora's box, essentially.
I would say the worst part of Rob, I would say, is when we find out all the stuff that he kind of pulled on Laura via her conversation with their mutual friend, Liz.
Joan Cusack.
Played by Joan Cusack, of course. Joan Cusack.
Who's also wonderful in three scenes, four scenes, yeah.
Has Joan Cusack ever been bad in a movie? She might have been in bad movies, but has she herself ever been bad in a movie? I can't
she's
think
like,
of anything.
She's like B.D. Wong.
Yeah.
Been in some terrible things, but great, but you just can't take your eyes off them.
Yeah, she's tremendous. She just, and so when we find out that like that he borrowed money from her
from
Laura, and he said something about I haven't been able to pay it back yet just because she's with Ian doesn't make me $14,000 richer. There's that whole bit.
Which is true.
We find out that she had an abortion he didn't know about.
Right.
But she had an abortion, and it was right around the time he said he was kind of sort of looking around, which is an amazingly cruel thing to tell a partner.
But also,
I'm sort of interested in looking around, but I'm going to stay with you until I find something better. Like that.
But also, he cheated on her, too.
That's
so
right,
that was all compounded around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because she, he blames her lawyer trick.
That's right, yes, because she's an attorney. Right, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Laura, though, sometimes I go between she's either extremely well-developed or kind of a vessel, and I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I'm in the middle there. I think, first of all, I think casting this woman, Iben, who was a Danish actress and really hasn't done a lot of American stuff, that was an interesting choice because, they could have picked 100 different cookie-cutter Hollywood actresses, and they didn't. They picked somebody, her line readings are kind of unusual. I think she gets little bits and pieces where you get to see her as a real sort of person independent of Rob. But, I think she could be a little better developed, but I think she's better developed than a lot of other, romantic partners in other Hollywood romantic comedies. I think she has a lot. I mean, this movie, that's one of the things that's unusual about it is that it's almost 2 hours because this movie keeps going after you think it would end.
Right. I was going to say that.
After he gets back together with Laura, you think, well, that's the end of the movie. No, he goes right back to his old behavior when he meets.
Yeah, there's plenty of room to mess up.
Yeah. Where he meets a music reporter played by Natasha Gregson Wagner.
Wagner.
And what is he doing? The correcting me. Stop it. So he meets her. And
Robert Wagner's daughter.
That's what I say. Yeah, Wagner. So when they meet, they have a little meet cute. And of course, she's adorable. And he starts making her a mixtape. And that's when he catches himself saying, when is this shit going to stop? And I love that idea that just because the you've hit the typical end of the movie doesn't mean this character is fixed. And he goes right back to his old bad behavior. And when later on he proposes to Laura, she laughs in his face.
Right, because she's not, as she put it, a safe bet.
Yeah.
Not exactly a safe bet.
And I love that the movie allows that to be sort of unresolved. I mean, clearly, when they're together at the end, they're going to be together. But it
or doesn't, will they?
I think so. I think so. But it's he's still going to be he still has work to do, which I think is a great detail. Oh, he's a yeah. I think that's a great detail.
No, I think well, it's funny you mention that because you know Hornby is often approached about doing a sequel to Nick Hornby, the writer of the book, about doing a sequel to the novel, and he says it's always like it comes down to the three questions: are they together? Do they have kids? And what's Rob doing? What could Rob possibly be doing today? Mm-hmm. Are they together is always no to him. Do they have kids? Probably yes. Probably yes.
Huh.
And what could he be doing is the thing that he gets hung up on. Because, and I think this is what's interesting. In 2 years, our time, real time, Rob's world will come crashing to a burning halt because of this thing called the iPod. And then the way music is distributed and the way it's consumed. His store, you could, I mean, this thing kind of writes itself, right? His store becomes absorbed or taken over or driven out of business by the Virgin Megastore that
sometimes
he
references. Sometimes I want to grab the country A through K rack and throw him out to the street and go work at a Virgin Megastore.
Right. So you know that everything he loves is going to end in a couple of years.
Oh, Lord. I don't want to see a sequel, man.
No, but I always find that interesting that, because I wonder. And I was thinking about this because I had read this article/interview. It was kind of a highlight interview with Stephen Frears for I think it was the 15th or the – because now this movie's 21 years old – the 15th anniversary of High Fidelity. And they got into the part where maybe Rob is sort of like kind of an archaic archetype and he mansplains things. And so it's framing Rob, who's very much – I would say an element of his time into a more, I guess, modern context. And he doesn't fit. And seen kind of just as this very unenlightened brute almost, which is weird because now I felt like an old man because I know there's a lot wrong with Rob, but I wouldn't think he's kind of a brute who mansplains. But maybe I mansplain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of, yeah. Yeah.
He definitely has very antiquated ideas and he is very immature, but I think he's aware of his shortcomings. I mean, he has the whole bit about, you know, I've read Love in the Time of Cholera. They're about girls, right? And then he's like, just kidding. I mean, so he kind of knows. And also another, Love in the Time of Cholera would be mentioned in Serendipity, starring John Cusack. So again, it's a sort of continuum of
that's
John
the anti-High Fidelity.
It is. I love that movie, but.
You do not.
I do. I love
Rob,
Serendipity.
A guy throws, what does she do? She hits. What's the elevator conceit in that movie?
We'll do another episode on Serendipity.
You can't like that movie. We can't be friends.
I have watched Serendipity dozens of times. It's one of Tracy's and I favorite movies. So.
How do you even like that movie? Do you like movies, Rob?
I do.
Get out of my store. Get out of my store.
You get your patchouli stink out of my store. That's another thing. I mean, for as much as this movie is a great love story, or is a great movie about a love story, it works just as well as a workplace comedy. And
oh,
it is kind of amazing.
We got to get into that, yeah.
It is kind of amazing that they didn't do High Fidelity, the series, because you could just set this in a record store and get a lot of laughs out of this. Because this, yes.
I was going to say, your guest on Pod Dylan, my friend Will Stegman, has one of my favorite short anecdotes from him was about going to this record store. And he goes up with a copy of your Blonde on Blonde on disc, hands it to the clerk, and immediately says, I have it on cassette and vinyl already. I just needed to complete the formats. Is that okay? I have two copies. And I mean, but that, yeah, I mean, I think we've been there. We've gone to a comic store. And, you know, we do this, and I'm sure you do this. If you see a guy in a Deadpool T-shirt, to you, that's like a juggalo in musical terms. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Or like, oh, it's a Hot Topic Harley Quinn girl. Okay, enjoy your One Direction show.
And it's funny that there's a guy from the Flash TV show in this movie, Alex Desert, of course.
Yes, Julio.
Julio is in the Flash. But
my world just keep coming into this thing, man.
Right. Now the scene where Rob is reorganizing his records, where he's got them all in piles on the floor, because he's talking about putting them in a different order when Dick stumbles on. I mean, to me, it's right. like you could just swap out records for comic books. I mean, how many friends do you have that you're like, oh, I reorganized my comics collection by New 52 and then older and then by yeah, company this... and then I have to... now do I put my quality Blackhawks under quality or do I put them in DC because they're DC? I mean, you know, it's virtually the same thing. And
right.
The thing is about this, and this was something I wanted to mention specifically about the way this was written by Cusack and Pink and the other guys. I mean, this is clearly a world they know. And the music references, to me, seem genuine. They don't yeah. seem crowbarred in. There was a movie about 20 years ago. I'm not going to say which one it is because I don't want to run down anything. But there was a movie about 20 years ago that was supposedly like the first movie for comic nerds because it was written by comic nerds. And I went and saw this movie, and it was like this pretty bad movie with the occasional Justice Society reference, like crowbarred in. And I was like, this movie is not for this. This was...
What comic book villains?
Yeah, no, writers, like comic book fans.
Oh, okay.
No.
Was that the movie?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to say what movie it is because I
say the movie.
Free Enterprise.
With my. Okay, tread lightly because that's Shatner.
Right. At the time that movie was sold as like, oh, this is written by comic book fans. This is like you comic book fans are going to love it. And I watched it and I was like, this is kind of a bad movie with, like, every so often they mention Dr. Fate, you know? And I'm like,
right.
This is not...
Oh, that movie. Oh, right. That was like, don't quote Star Wars to me. Yeah. I'll just, yeah. Oh, that was so heavy-handed.
Yeah, right, heavy-handed. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. But to me, the references...
I get it.
The references in this movie are completely organic.
Yeah.
Feel natural. The references to, I mean, I love Jack Black's whole thing where he's berating the customer, where he's like, I can't believe you don't have Echo and the Bunnymen record. You know, what do you mean? You don't listen to the Jesus and Mary chain? No, I don't. I just thought they were just kind of awesome is what they were. You get a Jesus and Mary chain record, and you complain about no more Echo and the Bunnymen records. And then he sells the guy Blonde on Blonde, where he's like, you don't
know. Which I'm sure that was like a beam to your heart.
Yes. Oh, I love seeing Blonde on Blonde. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and like, the whole bit about, again, where Dick and Anna meet each other and he schools her a little bit on Green Day.
Sticky fingers.
He says, yeah, their sound comes from two bands. And then she jumps in. She's like, Green, you know, The Clash. And he's like, yes, but also a band called the Sticky Little Fingers. And he puts the Sticky Little Fingers on in the store. And then another customer goes, is this the new Green Day? And Dick and Anna kind of roll their eyes at one another, like,
right.
what a jerk,
she's
what
got
an idiot.
Two second long knowledge all of a sudden.
I mean, to me, this movie, I'm not a music guy, aside from the fact I run a Bob Dylan podcast. But it's like,
you want to edit that one out?
I might take that part out. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I don't know. To me, this store feels like a real place. It feels very lived.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, were you like that at your video store? Like, do you want to rent that,
yeah.
sir? I have this Truffaut section.
Yeah. Yeah, we were a little bit at the video store I worked at. We were a little eye-rolly when somebody was like, oh, I don't like Letterboxd.
You know, oh, I used to hate...
Like,
okay, these are my three. I hate Letterboxd. I feel like I'm being robbed of some of the picture, and then I would explain it. You're actually getting more.
You're actually getting more, right.
They'd say, no, these black bars are distracting me. My other favorite was I would get movies returned to me with subtitles, and mind you, this is Texas. I'm from Texas, so I will gladly make fun of it. They would return and say, well, I don't feel like reading. And I would say, is it a reading problem? Do you have a problem with, if this is a literacy thing, I will gladly take your money. I will gladly refund your money. If it's the refusal to read, then I don't want you renting at our store. Because you're going to read the title. You need to read the titles. You know, you need – yeah, so they would bring that up. And the other one was charging full price for a cartoon that was like an hour long or something.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You're like, what's the new release? Yeah. Wednesdays I'll tell you how I broke up a marriage story at a video store.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I want to do a whole episode of Film & Water about my video store experiences because I worked there for several years and we had a really – I had a lot of stories that happened in the place. And, yeah, we were a little bit of a snob. We had a Blockbuster across the street. It was the art.
Oh, we had, yeah.
It was a Virgin Mega store across the street. It was really that same idea.
Yeah, I used to – did you get this where they would say stuff like, well, I'll just rent it at X store instead.
Yes.
If it was never in stock. Because we were a small – we were a family store.
Yep.
So we didn't have – and so, you know, we had three copies of something at the most, maybe four. Because as – I don't – your listenership's probably like at least 40, right?
I Well, I haven't done any polls, but I maybe so.
Well, for those that are younger, video cassettes used to cost $100.
That's right. In retail price was like $89.99. Yeah.
Right. In nineties dollars, so that's like $200 today, maybe. So a store had to really fork out a lot of money just to get these blockbusters, and then they would have to, you know, that's how they made their money back, was by renting them. So a blockbuster can buy 500 of these things, and they're always going to be available, but the mom and pop shop only had two, so the big complaint was that we never had anything in stock.
Right.
And then they would come in and just badmouth that.
Yep.
Yep. Did you rent adult movies?
Yes, we did.
Did you have the saloon doors or the beaded curtain?
Neither. It was just sort of we had these giant shelves that sort of formed a kind of bottleneck. So you really had to kind of want to go in there to go into that section. So
the wall of shame.
It was a little bit of a wall of shame. Yeah, believe me, I tried to do a video store episode like months and months ago, but the Skype completely screwed up, and so I had me and my guest, who was nice enough to come on to talk to me about it, we had to abandon the idea. But I want to get back to it because there are just a lot of great video store.
Because you're the Jack Black of video stores.
I am the Jack. This is it. This is a movie that to me this is the perfect use of Jack Black in small doses. I don't think Jack Black is funny as a lead guy. I don't think Tenacious D is funny. I've never been able to find Tenacious D funny. But I love his song at the end. I love that he gets a little bit of dignity too, because the whole movie, he's kind of a joke. I mean, he's clearly a loudmouth. Sometimes he's an asshole. That whole scene where he berates the dad who wants, I just called to say I love you.
Being an asshole though, or is that saving the dad from himself?
No, he's being an asshole. I love that the dad is self-aware too. He says, "Oh, I'm sorry, but I didn't know it was pick on the middle-aged squares day." Like, he knows that this guy is a hipster. I like that. But I love that at the end when him and his band, Jack Black, what's the name of the band? And the Uptown Five, something.
Barry Jive and the
Uptown Five. And he sings the cover of Let's Get It On. I think that's actually really, like, beautiful. I really like it.
Which is great, because that's the song that Rob says is Laura and his song.
Yeah, that's right. He says Marvin Gaye is responsible for our relationship, and she says,
What do you think about Laura's intervention into Rob's life? So we have these two kids that start up as shoplifters. It turns out that they're shoplifting good stuff because they're wanting to produce and create their own music. They make a demo. They kind of record a really rough demo,
right,
that Dick and Barry fall in love with, and then eventually so does Rob. Rob then agrees to produce their album's top five record under a label he just makes up on the spot.
Top five records.
So Laura, who and it bears noting that Rob met Laura when Rob was a DJ. She really liked his music. He makes her a mixtape, and that's where this whole mixtape thing comes from. And then so she decides to, one, kick his butt back into DJing, and then two, promote his album at an album party, and then three, allow Barry, who's been trying to become a singer for a band, and then finally does, allows Barry to do a set there. So there's these three huge anxieties of Rob all manifesting themselves at once, but none of this is his doing. Like, this is something Laura stepped in and did for him. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I think she's showing.
You're fine with that kind of thing?
Yeah. I think he needs a little bit of a nudge. You just talked about that. He wants to do these things. He's clearly, I mean, there's a whole, the whole scene with Alex Desert talks about, he's like, you guys feel like the unappreciated, you know, geniuses, so you shit on everyone who doesn't know more than you do. And they're like, yeah. I mean, so I think he just needs a kind of, again, to reference Gross Point Blank, that thing that Minnie Driver talks about, a kick in the head, which changes your view of life. I think he needs that. He needs that kind of nudge to, you know, recognize that he's capable of a little more. And he clearly wants to do this thing because he's into it. He gets the idea immediately. That whole scene with Vince and Justin is hysterical. I love when he calls Vince Justin, and Justin's like, it's Justin. And he's like, yeah, whatever. You know, he doesn't care less about
it. I don't know which one's which. I just found out which one was which today after lots of research.
Vince and Justin. Yeah, I mean, no, I think it's good. Are you dubious about that?
Yes and no. Sometimes because you know there's that whole. I'm sure you've heard it when you were in your pre-Darling Tracy days, when you would hear from women and sometimes guys that like men are projects or men need somebody to help them get to something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they need their partner to help them. Mm-hmm. Like they're incapable of doing it themselves. And so sometimes like because that's always rubbed me the wrong way. But the idea that Laura sees potential in him and gives him the nudge, I really like. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes I wonder about it. But when I wonder about it is only the times when I wonder about the strength of Laura's character. Mm. What's tricky about this movie is you don't know why, and you learn as you go, but sometimes it's hard to see why Rob wants Laura back so much. And it's not always and it's not always because it's about Laura, it's because it's about Rob sometimes, but it's sometimes hard spotting what made Laura so damn perfect or so damn wonderful. You know what I mean?
I think – I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt.
No, that's what I mean. That's it.
I think – I actually think it's because he wants to be better than he is and he recognizes that Laura is going to help him get there. It's funny. We've been watching Cheers on Netflix lately. We've been rewatching Cheers from the beginning and – it's one of the – like we're in the early seasons, and it's like why does Sam want to be with Diane so bad when they seem to be such a mixed match or whatever you want to say. And I think it's because Sam recognizes that he is capable of more than what he is, and he recognizes that Diane is the one woman that he's ever met in his life that can help him get there. And that's why he's attracted to her, and that's why he wants her to respect him, which is leads to the plot of a lot of the movies about he ends up getting sort of nudged into more moral behavior that the barflies wouldn't make him do, but right. Diane does. And so I think it's the same thing. I think Laura has got more of her life together, but she's also, you know, at times, I mean, when her father dies, that she goes back to Rob, and she basically sort of corners him and basically has sex with him, not force him to have sex because he certainly was agreeing to it, but like she really makes the move on him because she wants that comfort because he's capable of providing that. So I think that's what it is. I think if Laura pushed him into something that he was completely alien to, that would be different. It would be like, yeah, that's kind of a weird projecty thing. But he has all the pieces. He just isn't putting them together. And I think she helps put them together. And I think that's what makes it work for me. I mean, you do have to question Laura a little bit that she takes up with Ian, again played by Tim Robbins. He is so funny in this movie. Tim Robbins,
three scenes,
so
right? He's
great.
Like in 10 minutes.
When he goes in and he says, "You know, you've been stalking our house. That has to stop."
Oh, yeah.
And Rob says, "I don't do that anymore." And he's like, "You were there this morning." And then he has the line about conflict resolution is my business. You're like, "Of course it is." He is so funny in this movie. Like I said, three scenes, and then the fantasy sequence where they beat the crap out of him, which is great. I mean, it just we talked about this early on in the podcast. Like everybody here is so funny. Everybody's cast.
Lisa Bonet. We haven't even talked about her.
Yeah, Lisa Bonet is Marie DeSalle. She's great. She's really funny and sexy.
She's like Susan Day, only black.
Yeah, post Partridge Family, pre-LA Law, Susan Day, but you know, black. You know, yeah, she's great. Yeah, I love her whole. I love that she uses Rob to get over a breakup, and she admits that she's like, yeah, he's you know, because he says that after they sleep together the next morning, and he's like, yeah, I'm getting over somebody, and when she's like, what was her name, Laura, and she goes, what was yours name? His name is James. You know, she has that kind of quiet, and even she's self-aware too, because in the next morning when they split up, she says, I'm going this way. Where are you going? And he goes, I'm going this way, and then he pointedly says, I'll call you. And she kind of chuckles and goes, yeah. It's like, you know, she knows this was just a sort of one-night hookup. So you said every little character gets a little thing that makes them real. And I think that's why I love this movie so much. It holds up just so well. It's just these are all real people. As fantastical as this movie is, and you've got Rob Gordon talking to the camera, it just feels real. It feels honest.
Well, no, because I felt like he did, because I hate Peter Frampton. And then I hear her doing that cover, singing it the way she is, and I am smitten.
She's,
you know what I mean?
She's very charming in this movie.
She's radiant. Radiant. Yeah, we've all had that.
before I forget, I do want to mention there is a deleted scene that you can Beverly find D'Angelo. On YouTube with Beverly D'Angelo. It is, to me, one of the great deleted scenes in all of movies. It is a scene that you could see why they lifted it, because it has nothing to do with the plot. It is all
but
about
I think
his
it
life
does.
And record store.
I argue that thing should have been in the movie.
Let me back up.
Sorry,
not so
please.
Not to do with the plot. I think it's in, as they call it in the business, an easy lift. The scene is so, because he leaves the record store to go to this woman's house. The whole scene is in that house, and it you could see why they would lift it out, because it just it. The rest of the movie is basically either Rob's apartment or the record store. And here's this one extended scene that's not in either one of those locations. So you could see why they took it out. But I still love that scene. It is so fun. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, I'll put a link to it in the show notes, because you find it on YouTube. She is the spurned ex-wife of this rich douchebag who has left his priceless record collection behind, and with the instructions of just sell it. And, of course, she wants nothing to do with it. And so she is willing to sell Rob this priceless record collection for pennies on the dollar, because she wants to screw over her husband. So now you're in this reverse situation where the buyer wants to pay more than the seller wants to sell it for, because he cannot bring himself to buy these priceless records or pennies on the dollar. And for people that are record collectors, the scene doesn't explain anything. So if you're not a record person, you don't know what this stuff is. But his look of unbelief when he finds like original Clash singles or Sex Pistol singles, it is a great. I mean, it is literally like a comic book fan going to, you know, a garage sale and finding, you know, Action Comics number 19 or something for a dollar. You're just like,
right. But
oh
not,
my God.
Not just a collector, but also he's like, this is his business too, you know what I mean? So his livelihood is tied up into this thing.
He could make a fortune if he just bought his collection. Yeah,
I think he doesn't do it because it'd be like he's doing it to himself. And I don't just mean as a collector. I mean as a guy who conceivably would just leave with somebody else.
Interesting. I never thought about that. I never considered that. I mean, obviously the whole thing, he doesn't want to screw over another collector, even though the guy in question is terrible because he ran off with his secretary, as Beverly D'Angelo's character points out. I never thought about that. This is a guy, you know, I might be that guy someday, so I don't want to do that. I never thought about that. Yeah, you're right. I could see that.
There's a lot of callbacks, like, you know, Rob's power move of calling people in the rain. From a payphone across their apartments, or his hooking up with Marie DeSalle
Marie DeSalle.
Thank you for correcting me this time.
You're welcome.
It's like with the thing with Lily Taylor. So he just keeps falling into these patterns again and again. So that's kind of where I've seen this movie a million times. So I'm beginning to form and extrapolate things that may not even have been there intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is another deleted scene with Harold Ramis, the late great Harold Ramis, as Rob's dad, which got cut. So, I mean, boy, Stephen Frears really did the whole kill your darlings thing, because you're cutting out Harold Ramis and Beverly D'Angelo out of your movie. That could not have been easy.
He obviously is not a Vacation fan.
No. And then Cusack and Harold Ramis worked together later on in another movie. So they did get to do something together. And that's a funny scene, too. It's not as good as the Beverly D'Angelo one. The Beverly D'Angelo one, to me, is priceless. And they even reference it, because in the movie itself, he gets the phone call from what you will figure out is the Beverly D'Angelo's character. Because he's like, oh, yeah, I'd be interested in that. And he jots something down. And that's the scene. That's going to be the lead-in. And then they just cut it. I think that's the moment where the customer comes in and says, do you have soul? And Rob is in his depressive funk, and he's like, well, that depends on...
I think that's the Marie DeSalle. No, I think actually that goes to the Marie scene, because she's in the store, and he's looking at her CD booklet, or tape booklet.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And they're playing this her music, and he's embarrassed because, he's clearly obsessing.
Yes.
And, you know, what's funny, though, is if you want to talk about the difference between the book and the movie for a second, there are no kinky wizards in the book at all. Okay. And Marie she's an American, and they kind of play with the fact that the way she talks and acts is very unusual and different for Rob. So it's kind of attractive and kind of crass at the same time. But she ends up she's actually invited by Laura, after Laura and Rob have gotten together, to play at the store. And that's where she finds out, oh, I had no idea Rob like that she would, that Marie knew Rob and Dick and Barry so well. So there's that kind of weirdness right there.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
And, instead of having the Kinky Wizards release party, it's just Rob spinning and Barry singing. Okay. So that whole Kinky Wizards thing is completely for the film.
Interesting.
And there's a lot more interaction with his parents.
Oh, really? Oh, the scene with his mother is priceless, where she berates him.
This is why they always leave.
Yeah, this is why they always leave. You move in, she goes. And he's like, shut up, Mom. And he slams the door down. He's like, that is, what he says, that is some fucking cold shit or something like that.
Yeah, we've been there.
Yeah, and we've that been, is, that, oh,
that's boy. That's your mom when she sees a Superman movie with yeah. you.
All right, David, now stop.
Mama so, Kelly.
Yeah, well, it's... Maybe someday we'll have her on the show to review Superman.
Please do. You've had Shag on. You've had Ryan. You don't need another Ryan Daly episode. You need another Mama. I love Ryan. Don't get me wrong, but little Ryan, long way. Mama Kelly, Mama Kelly, and Pops Kelly, and of course, Darling Tracy. This is what we. This is what. Because you demanded it.
I don't. I like having that line between my family and my podcasting. Universe. So but
Superman we'll 4. So here's what we do. Superman 4, Michael Bailey, it's kind of his thing.
Yes.
Let him talk about the movie.
Okay.
Then supplemental.
All right. Okay. All right. I'm all right. I'm on board with that. I can do that.
Mom and Rob discuss that day.
I don't think she would even remember. I honestly don't think she would even remember that scene. It was important to me because I'm feeling that shame of my mother looking at me like, my God, my son's a mongoloid that he didn't these kinds of movies, so you know it's a whole other thing. Anyway,
he's the Lenny. Right, he's the Lenny Luther of the family.
But before we got to wrap this up. But the last
your thing credits.
The last one I want to mention the credits. First of all, again, after banging on Stevie Wonder for I Just Called to Say I Love You, they then give him a nice credit by playing I Believe When I Fall in Love It Will Be Forever.
And
it's a wonderful, I mean, you hear Rob as he's making a mixtape for Laura, and he talks about how he finally has figured out the things that are going to make her happy. He hits play, and boom, the song comes up on the soundtrack. And it features the best, I'd have to maybe think about it a little more, but off the top of my head, High Fidelity, to me, features the best end credit sequence of any movie ever made, because each of the main actors get their own concert poster or sticker.
Yeah.
And it is, to me, it is so joyous. It is so upbeat, so happy. And it feels like such a, like, this was a great party we had. And here are all the actors. And John Cusack and Joan Cusack and Joel Carter and Lily Taylor.
Ibn, whatever.
Ibn Yela, I think, is Ty Luizzo. Everybody. It is so imaginative that I have gone on to, you can find the end credits just by itself on YouTube. I have gone and watched the end credits by itself probably a dozen times. I love, it. To me, movies that end on a really great note are, to me, are kind of rare, and when one really sticks the landing, I leave the theater feeling kind of overjoyed, and this movie has that. I mean, everything wraps up great. Everybody gets, Dick gets a girlfriend, Barry gets to perform as a musician, and Rob and Laura get together, so everybody gets to have a happy ending, and it feels so perfect to hear that wonderful Stevie Wonder song playing over these great graphics. I just love it.
And then 6 months later, Championship Vinyl closes because of the Virgin Megastore.
What is the matter with you? Stop it.
Okay, but last thing. What I love the most is how organic Laura and Rob, how real their reconciliation feels. Because it's not fireworks, and it's not like a love at first sight thing, or like, oh, we bumped heads or we touched hands or some bullshit like that. It's, we're tired. We've been through this. Clearly it works, kind of, sometimes. Maybe more times than others, but this is what we're going to do. I think so honest.
Yeah, I think, as I said, he is still going to be a work in progress. And it is, I mean, again, that scene where he proposes to her and she says no, I think is a great, important scene. And then, yeah, maybe in the long run they don't end up together. But for a while, at least for now, I like to believe, I to me, most movies, you know. If you end up with that question, I always say, yeah, they end up together. I said the same thing about Before Sunrise and until they ruin that. I don't know. I like to think that Rob learns and he works further towards, you know, being the guy that he needs to be, and him and Laura end up together. That's what I tell myself. And so, again, the movie ends the way it ends. It ends with that upbeat thing, and to me, you leave the theater just feeling very elated and whatever. And so that's one of the things. I just love this movie. I just love it from beginning to end. It's just, the music's great, performances are great, it's really funny, everything about it. I just think it works. And most comedies that are 2 hours, I think, don't work. Because most comedies don't need to be 2 hours, but this, to me, works at 2 hours. I think it gives you enough of a story that you need to have all that, and it doesn't drag. To me, it stays funny throughout the whole thing, and just everybody's great in it. It's just terrific.
Is Before Sunset your Highlander too? Like you pretend it didn't happen?
No. That's a whole other thing. Before Sunrise is my favorite movie of all time, and Before Sunset and Before Midnight are wonderful movies, but they. I have to sort of I categorize them in a different sense than the first one because they're just different. And if we ever do a show on Before Sunrise, I don't know if I ever will. I'll explain it then. But
okay,
yeah.
We'll have to Sorry.
See. Yeah, I don't know. For many years after Before Sunrise, when there was no chance we were ever going to make a sequel, you had to come up with your own ending, and I had my own ending, and that's not the ending that Richard Linklater later provided. So you could decide for yourself.
Let's give him a call.
And give him a call? Sure, why not?
Went to school together.
Yeah. Did you really?
Well, not at the same time.
No.
As right. to carry the Highlander motif, different vintage. Same clan, different vintage.
Okay. Yeah, right. Both Texas. So, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, do you have anything else you want to say about High Fidelity before we wrap up?
Just go see it and read it. Please. They're wonderful together. Get the soundtrack. I don't know if the musical's any good. But the book is wonderful.
It didn't last too long, the musical, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Yeah, get the soundtrack. The soundtrack is great. I mean, the Beta Band and the Velvet Underground, Stevie Wonder, and Jack
Elvis Costello.
Elvis Costello, Bob Dylan. I mean, it is just a great collection of music, as you would expect from a movie with
Jack Black. By the way, though, the version of Let's Get It on the album, not the same version you hear in the movie.
Oh,
so slightly different. Yeah.
All right. I had the soundtrack. I'll remember that. Okay. Anyway, I love that version. I love Marvin Gaye. I love that version, but I do like the Jack Black version. I just think it's really fun. So, High Fidelity. Go see it, everybody. It's terrific. Go see it and read it. It's terrific. So, thank you, David. Thank you for coming and talking about High Fidelity, dude.
Thank you.
Where can people find me on the internet?
Probably one of your shows again soon.
Maybe.
I do love my favorite episode of this program up until this one. Your retrospective on Canon Films, episode 50. I'm only a part of that.
Right.
And I love that episode. So please listen to that. I just did an article for Emmys.com. Most of my work can be found on Emmys.com, but I just did one with Joaquin Cosio of The Strain. And I think I've got something else lined up for them. But that's it for now. Oh, and I'm supposed to be on Ryan Daly's coming up with The Secret Origin of Dolphin.
I think after that comment you made, I don't know if that's still valid, but that's for you. It's for you two to work
out. So wait, maybe I'm not supposed to say what character I'm going to be on Secret Origins episode pretty soon.
Loose lips sink ships, David.
And Shag's supposed to have this lost episode he and I recorded play sometime from the Doctor Who Gallifrey One convention last February. I don't know when that's supposed to play on your network, but he's been promising
from
that
last
for a
February.
While.
Wow, that'll be great with all the timely references.
Yeah, we're like, who's going to run for office in 2016?
I am sure Donald Trump's not going to be the nominee. That's one thing we can guarantee. So
Rubio looks good, man.
Yeah. He does. He does look good. Anyway, thank you so much, David. I thanks for coming on to talk about this. I love this movie so much, and I'm always happy to talk about it. So it's just terrific.
Oh, me too. Thanks. Thank you for finally doing this. Now we got one high out of the way. Next one, Lander, and we're good.
We're going to do High Anxiety next. That's next.
Oh, fuck.
Or Higher Learning. John Singleton's Higher Learning. So, okay, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Of course, you can find the show over on the network, which is firewaterpodcast.com, and on Twitter at filmandwaterpod. So, thanks so much for listening, and until next week, that's a wrap.
I believe when I fall in love with you, it won't be forever. I believe when I fall in love this time, it won't be forever. Without despair, we will share in the joys of care and will not be.
must never end. And with the strength we have, won't be erased. When the truth and love are planted and firm, they won't be hard to find. And the words of love I speak to you will echo in my mind. I believe when I fall in love with you, it will be forever. I believe when I fall in love with time, it will be forever. I believe when I fall in love with you, it will be forever. I believe when I fall in love with you, it will be forever. I believe when I fall in love with you, it will be forever. I believe when I fall in love.
Rob, you fucking asshole! Hey, Barry.